Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk. Hello, listeners. Welcome back to Luke's English Podcast. Let me tell you briefly what you can expect from this episode. So in this one, I'm talking to a fellow English teacher from England. His name is Andy Cook, and we've never actually met before. This is the first time we're talking to each other. But we thought we'd do this episode because we have a few things in common. Obviously, as I've said, Andy is an English teacher. He's lived abroad in various places. And unlike me, Andy is a big Instagram English teacher. Now, I do have an Instagram account, but I never, ever use it. Some of you are like, why not, Luke? Why don't you go on Instagram? As I've said before, if there was a 25th hour in the day, then maybe I'd be doing that. Or maybe I'd just sleep extra. I don't know. But anyway, so I'm not really on Instagram, but Andy is a big success on Instagram. He's got over a million followers. Some of his content has had millions and millions of views. So I'm curious to ask him about that, about the kind of process and experience of being an English teacher for Instagram. And he is also on YouTube and TikTok and other platforms too. But I think Instagram is maybe where he is most successful. So that's pretty much it. We're going to kind of have a rambling conversation about this and that. I hope you enjoy it. And I will speak to you again, if you're listening to the audio version of this, I'll speak to you again briefly at the end of this conversation. But for video viewers, you don't get that extra special rambling content that you find at the end of my audio episodes. That's just for the audio. But for the video, when the conversation finishes, that's it. All right. Anyway, I hope you enjoy this conversation. So let's get started right now. Andy, hello. Welcome to Luke's English Podcast.
Hey, Luke. How's it going?
Not bad, thanks. Not bad at all. This is the first time we've ever spoken to each other.
It is. It's a pleasure already. Thank you.
Yeah. Nice to talk to you. So I was just sort of thinking about this conversation and the things that we can talk about. And, you know, we've got a few things in common and stuff. And also it's a chance just to get to know someone and to let the listeners to, you know, hear me getting to know someone and all that stuff. So actually, first of all, where are you from, Andy?
I'm actually from a small island in the south of England called the Isle of Wight. It's famous for a lot of things, actually. Actually, I made a list of things it's famous for because I've been reading a book recently and they say it's a great technique if you have like some information about where you're from. So it's got a famous music festival. I believe it was Jimi Hendrix's last festival appearance in the UK there. It's famous for dinosaurs. Like we have lots of fossils. It's part of the Jurassic Coast.
Mm-hmm.
Charles Dickens loved it. So he wrote some of David Copperfield there. And there's also a famous boat race. So it's called Round the Island Boat Race. I'm not on the sailing circuit myself, but I think if you were, you would know about it. And it's a famous race.
Okay. So, yeah. A nice spot there on the south coast of England.
It is a very nice spot. Lots of sun. Touristy in the summer, but I like that. I like it. Lots of tourists come from all over the world. There's a bit of a buzz. You go down the seafront and it's a nice atmosphere where everybody's just having a good time.
Mm. Yeah. Very nice. I've never been there myself.
Have you been to the Isle of Man?
No, never been to the Isle of Man either. I think if it was a choice between the two, I'd go for the Isle of Wight first because it's more of a holiday destination. Whereas the Isle of Man is kind of like this sort of weird spot between England and Ireland, and the weather probably isn't so great, and there's lots of weird cats that have no tails that live on the island.
I've never heard about this.
No, Manx cats, no?
Yeah. But yeah. They're very similar. Like,
yes.
Just when I was on the Isle of Man, I went to the Isle of Man once and I was just like, this is basically the same as the Isle of Wight, but everything just is different positions and stuff.
Everything's just in different places. It's exactly the same. They've just moved everything around.
yeah.
Okay. Is there a sense that since you're from the Isle of Wight, which is an island off an island, does it feel different to the rest of the country?
It's funny because when I went to university, people were like, oh, do you have to have a passport to leave the island? Or have you got electricity there? very much like the UK. Just there is some element of it which is slightly behind. Not so much now, but people always say, like, oh, the island's 10 years behind the rest of the UK. Like, we don't have Uber taxis here. But we do have Uber Eats. So obviously I think the taxi drivers have stopped that happening for one reason or the other.
Mm-hmm. You're still in the EU. If only.
I had to think for a second and I was like,
well, you're 10 years behind, so, you know, you're still in the Marvel, you're still in phase three of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. You're still in the EU. No Uber yet. Ah, the good old days.
COVID, yeah. So, yeah.
No COVID, of course. Beware. Get ready for that
it's
one.
It's coming, yeah.
Yeah. You are a TEFL teacher, like me.
I've been teaching since 2019, so about 4 years now. Okay. I did my TEFL, and then I did a CELTA.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but you've got Delta, haven't you? I saw.
I do. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I did.
I plan to do that. Sorry, go on.
You do? Do you? Okay. Yeah. So I did my CELTA like eons ago in 2001, and then I did my Delta in 2006, which is also a long time ago now. So I'd been CELTA qualified for 5 years before I did my Delta. So you did your CELTA. You're thinking about doing the Delta. How was it? How was the CELTA for you? By the way, listeners, the CELTA, that's the Certificate in English Language Teaching to Adults. It's a Cambridge certificate. It's the sort of like the sort of usually the first qualification you get to be a TEFL teacher. There are other ones, but the CELTA in the UK is one of the most sort of officially recognised qualifications for teaching English to adults. So how did you find the CELTA?
It's very, yeah, I really enjoyed it. I learned a lot of stuff. It's interesting because I've been teaching for about 2 or 3 years before I did it. So it was great. I had a lot of knowledge and experience there. And then the CELTA gave me some extra bits. Just the main takeaways, I think, were giving the students as much talking time as possible, so not talking too much as a teacher. That was good. CCQs, is it? Concept checking questions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That I had never used before, so that was good.
What are concept checking questions?
They are questions where you can make sure that the student understands the vocabulary and the concept of the vocabulary, but you elicit it from them. So you don't tell them specifically, but you let them come to the answer themselves, basically.
Yeah. Now, after you've taught a certain thing or practiced a certain thing, you can kind of just make sure they've got it all at the end of the lesson by asking certain questions that will reveal whether they actually whether they understood it or they've completely misunderstood everything that you've been doing. which doesn't usually happen, but sometimes it does. Okay, Delta then, eh? Are you ready? You ready for the big daddy Delta?
Honestly, because it was only recently I did the CELTA, I haven't really researched much about it. Is it degree level?
It's like master's level.
It's master's.
Master's
level.
Degree. It's a higher diploma, which is equivalent to a master's, yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Serious. It's serious, man.
How was it for you? Just quickly. I know you're
horrible.
Me. was it?
Yeah. I did it I think I did it intensively or semi-intensively, but I kept working. You know, I was working at the same time as doing the diploma. I think I did it in about 4 months. 4 or 5 months, I can't remember, 3, 4, 5 months, something like that. And basically on day one, they kind of tell you what you can expect. And they say, look, you're not going to be able to do anything else except this and the Delta and your work between now and the end of the course, just so you know. You can sleep and breathe and eat and urinate, defecate, you know, the usual things that you need to do. The essentials, you know, the toilet based essentials, and kitchen based. Anyway, yeah. they said, look, you're going to have to just cancel everything. And they were right. You know, there's a point around about Easter when it really came to a head, and you've got several projects, several things to do. You've got an externally assessed, observed lesson, and then you've got the exams coming up at the end. You've got like there's so much stuff. It's a real trial. It's horrible. Having said that, when I finished, I found that it had switched something on. It flicked a couple of switches in my head as a teacher, and suddenly I kind of got all this inspiration. So one of the things that you have to do is in the exam, they give you a piece of material. So there's two things several things in the exam. One is that they give you a page from a textbook, and you've got to kind of analyze it and explain, you know, all the linguistic background and the teaching approach. And then you create a sample class and you create a lesson plan for how you'd use that material and all that. And they also give you a piece of authentic material. Like I got a mobile phone advert. Okay. And they said, okay. And so the task is, how would you adapt this and use it in a lesson? You've got to create a profile of a set of students, and then you've got to create a detailed lesson plan explaining how exactly you would use that piece of material. So having to prepare for that exam meant that I did that over and over and over again. And the instructors on the course gave us bits and pieces, and we just sort of had to turn them into lessons. And I found the summer after I did the Delta, I couldn't get that out of my head. And every single thing that I looked at, I would turn it into an English lesson. So I was kind of like, you know, just reading the newspaper, and I'd find something and like, oh, that's perfect. And I'd like keep it and then turn it into a lesson. And, you know, like my friends like showing me their holiday photos. And I'm like, oh, that could be a good English lesson. So it did help. Yeah. Yeah, but it's quite tough. Did you find the CELTA to be difficult or not?
Without sounding like, I don't know, big-headed or something here, mm-hmm. not particularly. I think it was great that I had been teaching for a few years. That was really good. The only difficult part were the lesson plans. They're very intensive on the lesson plans, and I mean, there's a difference between reality and working as an English teacher and what you do on the course. But not to say that they're not beneficial for each other, because they definitely are. Mm. But the lesson plans were very, very intensive and covered everything. So you have to write the lesson plan as if you are writing it. You're going to be sick and someone's going to cover you. But I think in reality, if you had to write 30 of those lesson plans a week, you wouldn't ever have time to do anything. But they're preparing you for the worst situation, or the most intense situation. So, yeah. So I also did it online. Did you do yours in class?
Yeah, in person, yeah.
In person.
Yeah.
Online, I mean, since COVID, everything I do is online now. Mm. I don't go to teach in the classrooms. I don't, but I like it. I like it. There will be a point where I go back and do some face-to-face teaching for sure, just to get that human interaction. I'd like to do big groups or maybe some sort of conference or talk. But yeah, it's all online. So that was quite interesting, doing a course online for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I've done some online teaching, but yeah, the vast majority of my experience has been in groups in front of people. It's brilliant. I love doing that.
I love having a large.
I mean, I like all of it. I like small groups. I mean, in terms of the teaching, it's kind of easier to have a smaller group. And so I prefer that. But then when there is a large room full of students, it can make the energy level much greater. You know, it can sort of bring a new buzz, a new dynamic to the room. And when you get a good group of people, it can be really great. Yeah.
What's the biggest class you've taught to?
So I used to teach at a university here in Paris, and we had classes of about 30 students. Wow. So that's too much. That's a bit too much. I mean, when it gets to that number, it gets difficult to actually manage the class because, you know, as you know, we don't just have one teacher at the front and then all the students sitting facing the teacher and taking notes while the teacher talks. You know, it's not that kind of setup. Although the university system does kind of set things up like that. But for a good language class, you want a much more decentralized sort of classroom. And that's much harder when I had 30 students and they were all sort of 18, 19 year old Parisian kids who were used to the old fashioned education system. And so I would try to put them into groups and I'd be trying to do these things and they were just like, huh? And they would speak French to each other all the time. That was difficult. So when you get to a certain number of, when you get to a certain class size, it naturally lends itself to the sort of lecture kind of situation, which can be good. You know, you can do little bits of stand-up in between doing the actual teaching stuff, which is quite a good way of managing a room full of people like that. So these days then, you also make videos on Instagram. And you've got a massive following, right? How many followers do you have on Instagram at the moment?
It's 1.2 million at the moment.
Wow.
So I was making just music and posting it on Instagram.
So you're a musician as well. I'll ask you about that too, because you said you worked in the music industry, but I think you've played in bands and stuff too, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'll ask you about that after, I would say. But anyway, so Instagram, okay. you were putting music on Instagram before, yeah?
Yeah, so I was putting music on, just generally making like 30-second clips to videos. And I mean, now I look back on it, it was kind of just for me. And like, I mean, at the time, I didn't just think it was for me. I was like, oh, why aren't more people listening to this? But then, as soon as I switched to teaching English and giving people actually something that they need and they're going to use, it just changed. So I just started making videos last July, I think, when I lived in Turkey, maybe a bit before that. And when I was in Turkey, one video went viral, and it went viral in the Middle East, so in Iran and other in Saudi Arabia, it went viral. And that just kind of started everything. So after that, I just keep making videos and videos. And it wasn't until January this year that we got over 1 million. So things actually, I didn't kind of notice it, but things snowballed really quickly, actually.
Yeah. What content of yours on Instagram is the most successful?
My most successful?
Yeah, the most popular stuff that you do.
It does vary. So my most successful one is just when I say, what's this? And I'll be like, just for example, what's this? It's a telephone. And that's it. And it's just four or five things. That was the first video that went viral.
Mm-hmm.
But there's other ones like processes are really good. So I did a video, I think it's got 8 million now, where, what? Yeah, I know, I was shocked by that, where I just come through the door. So I'm like, I'm coming through the door. I'm hanging my coat up. I'm walking down the corridor. I'm making a cup of tea. And that people really like.
Yeah.
My favorite videos to make, but I'd actually say they're the least popular, are idioms and like ones that have got a bit of humor in it. So there'd be like certain jokes in it. I can't think of any off the top of my head. Oh, there's one that's like, it's about, you know, we say, what's up? Like, so a character comes into the kitchen, they're like, oh, what's up? And the other person doesn't get it, and they're like, the sky or airplanes or birds. Yeah. And they're like, oh. So yeah, those are the ones that I like, but the idioms ones are the least popular. Maybe they're a bit too cryptic or a bit too advanced, I don't know.
It's like totally different to making the kind of content that I make. So yours is literally like, what's this? It's a cricket ball. You know, what's this? It's a pen. You know, like, so simple, but so great. You know, obviously for just, you know, for vocab and pronunciation. But yeah, totally the opposite to the sort of thing I'm doing, where I'm presenting these long-winded conversations. Why Instagram then? Is that just because you were already on the platform?
Well, I actually, every time I make a video, I upload it to Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. Mm. Just because it's so easy to do now. They all have their, like, YouTube has shorts, TikTok is just TikTok, and then Instagram has reels. So I just, but it just took off most on Instagram, which is interesting, because before that, it was taking off most on TikTok. When I started doing the English videos, I think I had about 80,000 on TikTok. And at that point, I only had about 2,000 followers on Instagram. And then just Instagram overtook it completely. Mm. And TikTok is, so I think the way TikTok works is it knows which SIM card you've got in your phone.
What?
So at the moment, it knows that I'm in the UK, and I think it's more difficult for my videos to reach. Well, I might be wrong here, actually. Maybe it's just people aren't liking it, but I'm pretty sure it's more difficult for my TikTok videos now I'm back in the UK.
Really? Yeah. Well, it's all very mysterious, all the different things involved.
All I was going to say is just the way, from what I've read, is I think it works like it will push my video or a video to like 100 people. And then a percentage of that people like it, and it will push it to a bigger pool of people. So if you think, like, when I'm making videos in Turkey or Bulgaria, it's just pushing it to people whose native language isn't English. Whereas here, it's pushing it to people whose native language is English. And in there will be a couple of, like, people who's are learning English. Mm. So, yeah, I think that's the problem, really.
I see. So a million followers on Instagram, and some of those videos have had about 8 million or something. Does it feel like, do you feel that that's had an impact on you in any way? I mean, do you actually notice in any sort of tangible way that, you know, you're kind of well known in a sense?
That's a very difficult question. I get a lot of messages. A lot of messages, people like, oh, thank you so much. You're really helping me. Like, loads of people ask me, like, could you tell me the difference between, like, something and anything? And I'm just like, okay, sure. But I really like that, because basically my goal, like I said, is to teach as many people as possible. I read a great book about, I just went through a point in my life where read a load of good books. And one of the common themes was that, like, just giving value to as many people as possible. Like, you think about your, I'm sure you know this, like, your podcast, people can listen to it whenever they want, wherever they want. Compare that to like a radio show that only airs once or something. Mm. Like, so that's what I really like, is these platforms give me the ability to just teach, instead of just one person for an hour in a classroom, it's just like 100,000 people in a second or something. Mm. So that's what's good. And I, for me personally, and I'm sure it's the same for a lot of people, that's might give me some sort of purpose in life, is to teach people. And I think we won the golden ticket by being born in a English speaking country.
Yeah, so we're quite lucky, aren't we?
Very lucky. So I just like being able to help people who didn't get that, basically. That's it. I'm not sure that really answered your question. I get a lot of messages. Yes, it's definitely helped me. I feel like more confident in front of the camera now. I'm not famous in the sense that, you know, like what we're talking about there, but a lot of people know the page who are learning English, and that's the main thing that I really care about, to be honest.
Nice. Do you feel it's different teaching classes or teaching one-to-one compared to making content for the internet? What's different about that?
So teaching classes, there's kind of a back and forth there. I mean, there is some level of back and forth. I make a video, people comment, I respond to the comment. But it's just different. I think, you know, these are like 10-second videos, whereas a lesson is, you know, usually an hour, could be 45 minutes, could be an hour and a half, 50 minutes. Those are the differences. Obviously, lessons are a bit more focused on grammar. I'd say most of the stuff that I see or that I do on the social media platforms is vocabulary based. Yeah, I have done a couple of grammar videos actually. Like I did one for present perfect with just so that I come through the door, I've got my shopping bags, and I'm like, I've just been to the shop, or like I've just made a cup of tea. So there, but I find vocabulary is what people are ingesting or digesting.
Both ingesting and digesting.
Yes,
because you ingest it means you eat it, right? And then you digest it means that you actually, you know, your stomach does its job. And we won't talk about the third stage in that particular process. How do you feel about Instagram as a platform in terms of mental health? Because, you know, I read a report saying that, you know, talking about the impact of social media on people's mental health, and Instagram came out as the worst one. Do you find that? Do you find that? Or do you think that's only for certain sort of users, or, you know, people who use it in a certain way? Do you find it to be a healthy space?
So I have never received any. Some people have said some bad things. So, yes, I mean, I haven't really researched much of this. I know, yeah, there can be bullying on there. Obviously, that's not a good thing. I think there's a part where I don't like to spend too much time on social media. I post. I don't really watch other people's things. It's a balance, I think. So I think there's two sides to it. Like the bullying question and the mental health question, I'm not sure I really can answer, because I haven't studied it. I'm not an expert.
Yeah.
I'd need to speak to some people that have actually been on the receiving end of that.
What I was thinking of is, rather than the kind of bullying or abusive comments and things, it's just simply, it's probably not in the way that you're using it, probably doesn't involve this kind of thing, but in terms of like that kind of content that involves a lot of fitness or body image issues or lifestyle things, where you can go onto it and you can get the impression that everyone else is having a fantastic time, being very happy, being very successful and very attractive and living these kinds of lives. But what you don't see is that those people are taking out a tiny, tiny little moment in their day, which they've spent probably the entire day trying to set up. So it's very unrealistic. The version of the world that you get through Instagram can be very unrealistic, and it can also manipulate your insecurities and your desire to improve yourself and so on, and manipulate your attention. And all of those things can be detrimental to your mental health, where you feel compelled to go on there. And when you are on there, like, your levels of dopamine are being played with, while simultaneously you're being presented with lifestyle images which are unrealistic and unattainable, but presented as if they are totally normal and everyday, because it's, you know, user-generated content. And that kind of environment, I think, is probably the unhealthy one. Whereas what you're doing with it is probably a lot more wholesome, in the sense that you're using it as a way to help people with their English, rather than, you know, I don't know, like, present some sort of perfect ideal version of yourself for the clicks. So it's probably a healthier space in that regard.
My wife has been really good with that, because, like, I make stories and, like, I was like, oh, I just want to, like, go and show me skipping. And she was like, you did that last week. Why can't you just, like, film, like, the dirty kitchen or something? Because, you know, people want to know that you're just, like, human. You're not only skipping every day. I was like, yeah, you're right. Because I was, like, unintentionally and unknowingly, I was, like, trying to present this image that all I do is skip every day and teach English.
You're super healthy, but, skipping, yeah, English teacher. Yeah.
But really, you know, I wake up on Monday morning, the kitchen's dirty. I like to have a McDonald's every now and then. So, yeah, and I was like, okay. I think, and I'm not really in a super good position to comment on this, but the best thing that I found, and I got this from a book, is don't compare yourself to anybody else. I don't look at other people's English teaching pages because, like, imagine if I went on, like, oh, that person's got 1.3 million. Oh, what? Why haven't I got that?
Yeah, or, even though you've got 1.2, you'd see someone who's got, like, more and might make you feel bad. And it's, like, it's ridiculous, isn't it, really?
So, yeah, I know it's easier said than done, but I just don't compare myself to anybody else now. And that's something that came with age. If you had asked me 10 years ago, I would have been, like, looking at other people. I also wonder if we'll ever get to a point where everybody knows Instagram paints a distorted image, that we kind of just, like, I know that's not it now. Do you ever think we'll overcome that?
You mean that at this stage we are still the kind of monkey brain is still amazed and surprised by this sort of magic box in our hand, and we look at it like, we assume that it's all real, whereas you think that we're going to become, through exposure, we're going to become more sort of critical in the way that we look at it, and we're not going to sort of be easily fooled anymore. I don't know.
Well, do you just think that people know that Instagram gives a distorted image now, so they're just like, okay, whatever.
Maybe at the beginning, when all those things were new and real, and people didn't quite have the filters, you know, the personal filters for that sort of content, that maybe then people were a lot more susceptible to all of the effects of it. You know, it's sort of like the early stage. Who knows? I mean, you know, who knows? What will probably happen is that future generations will just totally accept the blending of this technology and normal life, so that it won't even be an issue anymore. Instead, it'll just be like the Instagramization of everything will just be really normal. And I don't know, like with augmented reality and with AI assisted everything, you know, it's just going to be like reality will just be totally augmented by technology, and that's just going to be like the new normal. So I don't know. I'm sure that some people will suffer, because that's the way it always goes. When you get new things and change and social change, there's always some people who suffer as a result of it. Hopefully it won't be many people. But yeah, we're probably going to evolve along with this technology, and hopefully we'll be less sensitive to it, but who knows?
It's interesting you say that, because somebody was telling me about, is it called ChatGPT or something?
ChatGPT, yeah.
It can write essays for you. And I was like, eventually the education system and universities and us as the human race are going to have to do something about that. Like, you can't just hide from a software that can write full essays for you. Mm-hmm. So how do we deal with that? It's just a friend was telling me about it the other day, and I was like, what's going to happen with that? How do we deal with that?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
The fact that kids can go off and just write an essay and do it. So, and get it ChatGPT to do it. Well, like, there's two things that spring to mind. The first thing is that maybe the universities or the academies or whatever will find new ways of assessing their learners. So rather than telling them to go off and write an essay, which is already, I feel, a little bit sort of maybe a little bit contrived and a bit old-fashioned in a as a form of assessment. Who knows? But this might be the thing that stops that. It might become a lot more oral-based, and so there might be oral examinations or presentations or other types of projects that don't rely on that basic written format that can now be easily replicated. Or maybe new software, and there's a whole industry behind this kind of thing, new software will be developed and sold to the universities, which will allow them to detect whether the essay has been written using ChatGPT 3 or 4 or whatever it will be. That, you know, like as this technology improves, the other sort of peripheral technology also races to kind of catch up with it. I mean, there's already software you can use online, or there was before November when ChatGPT 3 was sort of officially launched to the public. And that's what got everyone talking about it. Before that happened, there were bits of software that you could use to write essays. And universities had other software, like counter software, that would detect whether... And all their work, all the work gets put through this software to detect whether it's been made by AI. And ChatGPT is so sophisticated that it's undetectable with this software. So, you know, what will happen is that new software will come out that will be able to detect ChatGPT, and that will be sold off and whatever. So there's those two things. And the third thing, what was it? What was the third thing? Oh yeah, that's it. The other argument that I've seen quite a lot about this is that essentially ChatGPT is just a new tool, and we're just struggling to come to terms with it. In the same way that back in the old days when calculators first were created and everyone got them, and suddenly we could all have calculators in the classroom, everyone was saying this is going to just completely destroy the teaching and of maths, and no one's going to learn how to do maths anymore now that we've got these machines that do it for us. And what happened is that we ended up sort of accepting the calculator as just a little handy tool that you work with, and we sort of blend with that technology. You know what I mean about the augmented reality thing I mentioned before? That in a sense, calculators are like that. You've got this thing in your pocket and then in your phone that you can just quickly consult to do some complex maths problems. In the same way that we might go to ChatGPT just as in a very ordinary way and just ask it to do things as a little assistant, and we take those things and we can adapt them. I mean, I'm already doing it. So for my English lessons, I will these days look at the lessons I've got, and then I might go to ChatGPT and say, if I've got some target language, like I've got 10 vocab items, I might say, make some example sentences using all this vocabulary. And then I'll say, now, you know, remove the target words and replace them with numbers. And now randomize the list. And now make some fun conversation questions using that language. And now remove the words from the conversation questions. You know, and I'll just do all that stuff. And this is stuff that I used to do on my own. And I would be there going, all right, think of a funny, interesting example. And then it would take me bloody ages to write all these examples and then turn them into questions with gaps in them and all that stuff. And ChatGPT does that like so fast. It's one of the best ways for me to use it, I find, is that it's very good at producing sample language. So maybe we'll learn to live with it. And maybe the education system will adapt around it, or maybe we'll find software solutions to counterbalance the impact that it's having. I don't know, but it's pretty fascinating.
Just as a final point, Ella, I wonder whether the universities will basically come to sort of an arrangement with ChatGPT, where like maybe you're given a code and it knows how much, like, so each student is assigned a code and they know how much you've used the software, so it's okay to use it for a little bit but not to write the whole. So I feel like universities will have to just speak to ChatGPT and take them on board, and some sort of relationship is formed there, maybe.
Yeah. Or maybe even there'll be a new academic sort of AI chatbot that is developed by specific universities or is sold to all the universities, and then they use that in-house kind of thing. Yeah, but I mean, there's no way of getting away from all this kind of AI stuff. The frightening thing is when it, you know, it develops exponentially, and it can like develop its own intelligence and write its own code eventually, and then it'll suddenly take off and become self-aware. You know, there's that Terminator kind of thing. And, you know, it's a fairly realistic problem that AI could become dangerous. And what I heard, I watched a video about it. What I heard was, so imagine this scenario. Imagine you say to some AI, it doesn't have to be ChatGPT, it can just be some other like powerful AI system. You say to it, okay, I want you to remove all the plastic from the oceans. Let's like, you know, save the planet. Let's remove all the plastic from the oceans. And it goes, okay. And it finds a way to do it and it does it. But it achieves its goal. But the problem is like the way it achieves that goal. And if you say remove all the plastic from the oceans and then it does it, but it also removes all the fish, you know, it just kills everything and removes everything. So that could be a problem that you ask it to do one thing. And you also have to take into account all the other possible things it could do to achieve that goal. And so you've got to program in all these other sort of directives so that in solving world poverty, it doesn't just murder everyone. You know, you know, there you go. Like, it's like, you know, I've got a headache. Help me get rid of my headache. I've got the answer. Just chop off your head. You don't have a headache anymore. So all sorts of interesting things around that. It's fascinating. Okay. So let's move to music then at the end of this conversation. You mentioned before that you worked in the music industry. I didn't know you worked in the industry itself, but... you also played, have played, maybe still play, in bands, right? Mm,
yes. So I played, I was in my first band when I was like 15. And I remember like our first ever concert. And I remember running from my house to the high school with the guitar in my hand because I was so excited. And that was good. I remember our first ever concert. And then so I was in that band for a few years.
What was that band called, I may ask?
Yeah, sure. It's called Broken Boneless.
So Broken Boneless.
Yeah, exactly.
What kind of music was it?
Punk. Mm-hmm. Punk. But not like old school punk. I don't know. Something 2000s-ish. I don't know how you say it. Just punk. Okay. So, yeah, I mean, the first gig we played, we just did covers. Like Red Hot Chili Peppers, Californication, Teenage Kicks, The Undertones, mm-hmm. Blink-182, Damn It, I think. So, yeah, I was in that band. Luckily, because on the Isle of Wight, we used to have two music festivals. So the summer would be started by the Isle of Wight Festival and the summer would be closed by the festival. So the summer period was sandwiched in between these two festivals. And the Isle of Wight Festival let local bands play on like a smaller stage. So that was quite cool to do that a few times. My friend's band actually won a competition to open the main stage on the Saturday. Whoa. That was really cool. Yeah, wow, they played that. And I think they played the best of all. So yeah, I did that. And then when I was at uni, I was in another band, which was like folk indie punk. We toured around a lot. I got to see a lot of Europe there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that was really good. Just we were part of a scene where like, it's got loads of underground promoters. So for people who don't know, promoter is a person who organizes a gig. So, yeah, there was just a massive scene and we could go around. I went to see like lots of places around Europe. That was good. Played in America once. That was really cool.
Wow. So were you professional?
We were breaking even.
We signed? Were breaking even.
Yeah, but on a licensing deal to a label called Extra Mile. They've got like Frank Turner, you know, Frank Turner, like indie folk punk guy. Really okay. Cool. I haven't listened to him in years. Yeah. So they're a really nice independent London based label. They're really friendly. I think they've just done their 20-year anniversary at the Apollo in Hammersmith.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, to do it at a big venue like that, it shows that they've come quite a way.
Mm.
So that was cool. It was just a licensing deal. So they basically just promoted one album.
A licensing deal. So what did they, they helped you record the album?
No, we did that, but they helped with the promotion and the radio plugging and things like that. So they were really helpful. And I can't remember what the deal was, but it was good. It wasn't like we were being ripped off or anything. It was like, it very felt like you were part of a family and a community.
Mm-hmm.
So that was good. Yeah, and I did that, and then we broke up, and then I moved to London after that. I think we did it for about 7 years.
Why did you break up?
I guess it just changed, really. Like, my music taste changed. We did it for 7 years. It just felt like, I was just needed something different, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Sorry, go on.
I was going to say, no major, like, personal drama between the members of the group?
No, big drama. It's funny because in your email you mentioned Spinal Tap.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about the film Spinal Tap, which I did an episode about last year or the year before with my brother. We just talked about the phenomenon of Spinal Tap. And as a musician, you will know everything that involves, right? If I say Spinal Tap, one of my questions was, did you ever have a Spinal Tap moment in the band? Is that what you were about to talk about?
It's been a long time since I've seen that movie. If I remember correctly, there's an ongoing joke about their drummers dying. Is that true?
Yeah. They keep going through drummers, and there's a drummer who dies in a bizarre gardening accident.
Yeah.
Another drummer chokes on vomit, but they're pretty sure it's not his own vomit. Another one just explodes. He spontaneously combusts on stage and is just left with all that's left is like a little green globule on his drum stool.
Yeah.
All the drummers keep dying. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. We had six drummers.
Six drummers.
none of them died, luckily.
Good.
Over the course of the 7 years, we had six drummers. We had a lot of member changes. So the drummers were the main one that changed. I think at the end of it, it was just two of us left. And that was like, oh, okay, it's time to finish now.
There's literally just two of us left.
I guess we can't do four instruments.
Right.
Yeah.
So. Yes. Okay. It happens to all bands in the end. They always kind of devolve into that kind of Spinal Tap kind of thing. Well, Andy, it's nice to talk to you.
Yeah, thank you. I really enjoyed this. It's been excellent. I mean, I could talk for a lot longer, but I know we've got stuff to do, but I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Totally different to the usual Instagram. What's this? It's a bottle of orange juice kind of stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
I was going to say, you can invite me onto your Instagram to do the same thing. What's this? It's a tape measure. She's like, all right, nice one. Great collaboration.
I did do a video about tools, actually.
Oh, good.
Yeah, like, what's good, good. It's a drill.
How do people find your stuff on the internet?
At English with Cook. So Cook is with an E. Just at English with Cook on YouTube. This year, I will be focusing more on YouTube. I'm going to start some like longer content. So like 10-minute stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
TikTok and Instagram as well. Yeah.
Well, have a lovely day.
Yeah, thank all right, mate. You. And maybe somewhere in the future we can work together again. I really enjoyed it. So
yeah,
yeah,
okay,
okay, cool.
All right, keep in touch.
All the best. Thanks for your time.
Cheers, Andy. Bye for now.
See you later, Liz.
Okay, so that was Andy Cook. Thank you again to Andy. It was nice to meet him and have a bit of a chat. Again, you can find him on Instagram at English with Cook, with an E at the end of Cook. And that's where you can see his amusing and helpful short video clips with bits of vocabulary and grammar. You can also find him on YouTube and TikTok as well, English with Cook, with an E on the end. Okay? Now, I tell you what, listeners, you are spoiled when it comes to English learning content, don't you think? How many online English teachers and content creators are there out there in the world? On the internet. So many. There's just millions. Everyone. It seems like everyone who's qualified as an English teacher is now online, just, you know, offering you free English learning resources. Everyone is dying to teach you English, basically. How nice. It's not like that for every language, you know. And it didn't used to be like that as well. There was a time when you just couldn't find any decent learning English content out there. Anyway, it's a good time to be learning English, I think. Okay, so that's basically the end of the episode. You can consider the episode to be more or less finished now. I haven't played the ending jingle, but let's say the episode is finished. So, you know, that's it. It's done now. But hang out with me for a while. Why don't you hang out with me for a little while now at the end? Now, I'm actually recording this later than I recorded the rest of the episode. To be honest, everything's a bit mixed up at the moment, as you probably know, because I talked about being in a time loop and recording lots of episodes in advance and then coming back to recordings I've made to add introductions and ending ramble bits and other stuff. So the conversation with Andy was actually recorded, I think, in March, like at the beginning of March, and then I did the introduction on the same day, and then I recorded some of the ending part that you've just heard in maybe April, and here I am again adding a bit more in June. Now it's Friday the 9th of June as I record this, and I thought maybe it'd be nice to hang out for a little bit maybe play guitar. I feel like singing. So maybe join me. Now, I actually got a few comments recently after I played a bit of Wonderwall at the end of the episode with Alistair Budge, because we talked about playing Wonderwall on the bagpipes, and then I just thought, oh, okay, I'm going to have to play Wonderwall now on the guitar. And I played that, and I got a couple of comments, not an overwhelming number, but I got a couple of comments from people saying, oh, it was nice to hear you singing on the podcast again. And, you know, I'd miss that, actually. Luke, why don't you sing and play the guitar again like you used to? And, yeah, actually, before I sang Wonderwall, it had been nearly a year, I guess, since I played the guitar. And the reasons for that are, first of all, I think I just kind of got out of the habit of doing it. And secondly, I don't really have the right guitar in my pod room. So I've got several acoustic guitars, right? I just love guitars. I'm not like the greatest guitar player ever or anything like that at all. In fact, I'm sort of an intermediate player, really. And I've got, you can see in the background of my videos, there's an electric guitar on the wall, which is a lovely guitar. Not a super sort of expensive rare edition or anything. It's just a standard sort of Mexican-made Fender electric guitar, the sort of cheaper range of those guitars. But it's a nice one. It looks nice and it's lovely to play. Although I'm not an outstanding lead guitarist. I try to basically hold my own, as we say. I try to hold my own, just playing the acoustic guitar, playing chords, and trying to sing songs. Out there you're learning languages. I'm obviously trying to work on my French, but also I'm a learner of the guitar too. I got out of the habit. I've got a couple of acoustic guitars, but the one that I actually find easiest to play is the one that is in our apartment. So that one's at home. And then here in the pod room, I've got a Spanish style or classical style guitar. And the thing with these ones is that they're a little bit harder to play. I find them harder to play because the neck is wider. There's more space between the strings. And it feels like every single bum note that you play can be heard. I realise I'm not selling myself very well here, but, you know, it doesn't matter. That's all right. So anyway, I just feel in the mood to perhaps play some songs again, because I haven't done that for a while. And playing music is actually quite soothing. And, you know, when things get, as they do in our lives, when things get a bit sort of stressful or a bit too much or a bit sort of overwhelming for whatever reason, you know, there are many possible reasons for that, it can be quite therapeutic to try to play songs. Sometimes it's frustrating because you just try and do it and you're like, no, it's not working today. But then other times, it's just a nice thing to turn to. And particularly, just these last few days, I've been playing songs by George Harrison. I find them to be quite sort of, what's the word for it? Not therapeutic. I don't know if that's the right word. They're just quite, the tone of them is nice. I find them to be quite comforting, I suppose. So I'm going to try and do a couple of George Harrison songs on this Spanish style, classical style guitar I've got here. You know, it's one of those ones with nylon strings. It's a Cordoba. It's a Cordoba C5. It's quite a nice one. So let's give it a shot. Okay, I'm going to try and play a couple of songs from the All Things Must Pass album. Okay, all right. This one is the first track on the album. It's called I'd Have You Anytime. And it's the one that opens the album. By the way, the All Things Must Pass... Why am I saying that? All Things Must Pass is a great album, and it's one of the best solo Beatle albums. George was the one who, when the Beatles split up, it was very liberating for him, actually, because he was suddenly able to publish all these songs that he'd built up that, for whatever reason, the other Beatles weren't that interested in, because they had their own songs that they wanted to record. And suddenly, with George blossoming as a guitar, as a songwriter, suddenly there were all these other songs, and it was just too difficult to fit them all into the albums, whatever. Maybe they should have, but in the end, George kept them for himself and he published them in his own album. So, all right, this one's called I'll Have You Anytime. Been here, let me into your heart. Let me know you, let me show you, let me roll it to you. All I have is yours, all you see is mine, and I'm glad to hold you in my arms. I'll have you anytime. Let me say it, let me play it, let me lay it on you. Let me know you, let me show you, let me grow upon you. All I have is yours, all you see is mine, and I'm glad to hold you in my arms. I'll have you anytime. Let me in here, I know I've been here. Let me into your heart. That ending was unexpected. I played a wrong chord. That bit wasn't supposed to be there. But it ended up sounding quite nice, didn't it? All right. What else have we got here in this album? There's obviously My Sweet Lord, which is the one that probably everyone knows. I think I should probably play it down here. But it's a fiendishly difficult song to play. Because, oh, there are some difficult bar chords. Your fingers start hurting. And, it's quite... Some of the changes are kind of complicated. And you've got to play it quite hard. And, yeah, it's tough work on the fingers. But it's a great one. Everyone knows this, don't they? It's in one of the Guardians of the Galaxy films. I think the second one. Thank you.
my sweet Lord. I really want to see you. I really want to be with you. I really want to see you, Lord, but it takes so long, my Lord. My Lord, my sweet Lord, my Lord. I really want to know you. I really want to go with you. I really want to show you, Lord, but it won't take long, my Lord. My sweet Lord, my Lord. I really want to see you. I really want to see you. I really want to see you, Lord. I really want to see you, Lord, but it's a difficult chord.
I didn't do it justice. Too many wrong notes and bum chords, but... What a lovely song it is. Let's try this. Wah, wah. Right, so I've got another acoustic guitar here. I talked about the one I've got at home and the one, the Spanish one, that I've just been attempting to play. But in an effort to get the right guitar in my office, I bought myself another one. And this one that I've got now is a kind of travel guitar. So it's the neck is shorter. The reason I bought that is because obviously I don't have a lot of space in this room. And so I need a guitar that's kind of shorter so I'm not constantly whacking it against the wall or whacking it against the microphone. Also, travel guitars, because they're smaller, tend to be a bit cheaper, you know, a bit more affordable. Not that I'm a cheap bastard or anything, but, you know, I'm not made of money. It's like... money doesn't grow on trees, as they say. So I have to try and be sort of a bit frugal. And if I'm buying all these guitars, I can't buy like the most expensive models. You understand. So this one is it's made by Taylor, which is a really good brand of guitar. Yeah, Taylor, Paul Taylor. No, not made by Paul Taylor, but it is a Taylor. I couldn't find any guitars called Thompson, so I had to buy a Taylor instead. That was the next best option. But they make really good guitars, and this one is a Taylor GS Mini, and it's the mahogany version. It's a lovely guitar. If it's in tune. Okay, here we go. I've got to tune it up now. Let's try that. I'll probably edit the tuning part out. So it should be in tune now. So the thing about the this shorter neck, though, is that, of course, the frets are also smaller, shorter. And I've got fairly big hands. And so this also is not ideal for me. I struggle to find exactly the right guitar. It's a lovely guitar. I'm definitely going to keep it. But it's also tricky, especially if I use a capo, which you know, allows you to play further up the neck. And up there, the frets are actually really small and my big clumsy fingers sort of struggle a little bit. Again, I'm really selling myself here, aren't I, as a guitarist? But it doesn't matter. It's all right. It's all good. So this one's called Wah Wah. And I think George wrote this when he was a bit pissed off with Paul McCartney during the Get Back sessions. Or at around that time. I think the wah-wah thing is a headache. So I think that Paul really annoyed George one day and he gave him a headache. I don't know if there was a moment where Paul gave George his wah-wah pedal. Like, there you go, George, you know, there's your wah, there's my, play this. You know, like, Paul was disrespecting George by bossing him around or something. I don't know what was going on, but... George was a bit annoyed and he went home and wrote this, and it's a good one. The original recording of it is much bigger with a huge band playing it and a big horn section and everything. It's incredible. The full wall of the Phil Spector wall of sound in full effect. But obviously I can't replicate that, but I'll go through the chords.
You're giving me a wah-wah, and I'm thinking of you and all the things that we used to do. Wah, wah. Wah, wah. Wah, wah. You made me such a big star. There at the right time, cheaper than a dime. Wah wah, you've given me your wah wah. Da 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 da. See me crying. Oh, you don't hear me sighing. Wah wah, I don't need no wah wah. And I know how sweet life can be if I keep myself free. Wah wah, I don't need no wah wah. Oh, you don't see me crying. Baby, you don't hear me sighing. No, 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 no. Need no wah wah, and I know how sweet life can be if I keep myself free. Wah wah, I don't need no wah wah.
Right, I've got to go back to the other one now. It's boiling hot in Paris today. Absolutely sweltering. It is baking, Dave. It is baking, mate.
I couldn't even find the door. I couldn't even see the floor. I'd be sad and blue if not for you. If not for you, the night would see me wide awake. day would surely have to break. It would not be new if not for you. If not for you, my sky would fall, rain would gather too. Without your love, I'd be nowhere at all. I'd be lost if not for you. If not for you, the winter would hold no spring. Couldn't hear a robin sing. I just wouldn't have a clue. If not for you. My sky would fall, rain would gather too. Without your love, I'd be nowhere at all. I'd be lost if not for you. If not for you, the winter would hold no spring. Couldn't hear a robin sing. I just wouldn't have a clue. If not for you. If not for you.
This next one, I think he wrote this for Bob Dylan. Bob Dylan was, I don't know what was up. He had, maybe it was the time when he'd had a motorcycle accident and he kind of retreated from the world, kind of went into hiding. It's hard to tell what was going on with him. Just sort of disappeared. And I think George wrote this in order to encourage him to come back and sing again and stuff. Still crying, your pain is now through. Please forget those teardrops, let me take them from you. The love you are blessed with, this world's waiting for. So let out your heart, please, please, from behind that locked door. It's time we start smiling. What else should we do? With only this short time, I'm gonna be here with you. And the tales you have taught me, from the things that you saw, makes me want out your heart, please, please, from behind that locked door. If I'm rich or I'm poor,
please let out my heart. Please, please, from behind that locked door. From behind that locked door.
Right, one more. One more. back to the Paul Taylor special. So this one's called Beware of Darkness, and yeah, it does what it says on the tin. It's a song about how sometimes you need to beware of darkness.
Watch out now, take care, beware of falling swingers, dropping all around you. The pain that often mingles in your fingertips. Beware of darkness. Watch out now, take care, beware of thoughts that linger, winding up inside your head. The hopelessness around you in the dead of night. Beware of sadness. It can hit you, it can hurt you, make you sore, and what is more, that is not what you are here for. Watch out now, take care, beware of soft shoe shufflers. Dancing down the sidewalks as each unconscious sufferer wanders aimlessly. Beware of Maya. Watch out now, take care, beware of greedy leaders. They take you where you should not go, while weeping at the cedars. They just want to grow, oh, and grow. Beware of darkness. Beware of darkness.
And on that note, I think it's time to end. Thanks for hanging out. It was fun. Lovely songs, aren't they? Yeah, good stuff. Okay, well, I'll speak to you again in the next episode. Thank you for listening all the way through to the end. Thanks for sticking with me, folks. I'll be back with more podcasting stuff for you in the near future. Now, this afternoon, I'm going to work on some premium content. Yeah. Got to keep on pumping out the content. All right, then. So I'll speak to you next time. But for now, it's just time to say goodbye. Bye. 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 Bye.
Thanks for listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.